Happy New Year. It is episode 65 of Eurobash. We're back. I'm sure it was a horrendous week for you all last week, trying to figure out what else we can listen to, but it's okay. Your queries have been brought to an end as the dynamic duo return once again. Niall, how have you been, my friend? We're very close to this big, big fight on January 18th.
I'm great, man. Very quiet Christmas, so I'm not really feeling the blues as much as other people. I wouldn't imagine for once in my life. Heading into this January, yeah, but very much looking forward now to a big year of mixed martial arts ahead, obviously starting in 2 weeks' time, and Happy New Year to everyone. I love you all.
Yeah, of course, we hope you had a great one. It's nearly been like a role reversal over this Christmas, because I drank the face off myself, and Niall's been quite a good boy, but I did my best to keep an eye on the news. I didn't succeed, but I will give it a go. I have four or five points here, the fights that have been made over the holidays, which I'll be happy to run through if you'll be happy to listen to me, Noel.
Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
This is number one bullshit.
Leon Edwards and Tyron Woodley reportedly targeted for UFC London, even though we told you 2 weeks before that report came out. It is still targeted once again. Mike Grundy v. Makwan Amirkani is going to happen on that card, according to our good friends at MMA Viking. Nad Narimani v. Nick Lentz is going down on UFC Rally on January 25th. Arnold Allen already on that card, I believe. Laron Murphy v. Gabriel Benitez is on that London card as well. That's a big test for Laron again. Two really tough tests he's had since he came in. Took Hogoff and now Benitez. Ian Q. Dalaba against Magomed Ankalov is on the Norfolk card in late February. And Davey Grant will take on Louis Smoka on March 28th in Columbus. Yeah, that's them all. Leon Woodley, is it going to happen? It feels like a lot of talk still about it. Nothing quite happening. And of course, Leon slagging the rap career of Tyron Woodley did not go down too well. Tyron saying he won't sign if he keeps on slagging his rap music.
Yeah, listen, you don't know what's going on with Tyron, and I know he said before he doesn't want to fight overseas, etc. But
pay the man. Let's get it done.
Pay the man, get it done. He's fought in Shanghai before, I believe, so I don't see why he wouldn't want a trip to London if he's not going to fight overseas. But yeah, listen, either get that done, get Darren Hill Hermanson done, get something done. I think just need to get a date announced at this stage, because it is sort of frustrating for the fans that they don't know what the main event is and the tickets are on sale again in, like, I think 20 days' time.
Yeah, definitely. Of course, the big talking points of the last week or so is the fact that Conor McGregor and John Kavanagh have finally broken their silence, so to speak, ahead of this fight camp. Huge interviews with Oscar Willis, our good friend. Number one trending on YouTube, the McGregor interview. And this is, I thought it was quite interesting, because I began the year kind of thinking there's nothing about this fight, there was no buzz. But a few things that have happened there, like including them interviews, Conor number one on YouTube. There's also been an ad on during the playoffs or the wild card matches. I saw Ariel and Damon tweeting about that.
Yeah, on Saturday night it was the great game, actually. I don't really watch it.
Oh,
but it was
the Titans and the
Titans and the Buffalo Bills. I came in from work and watched it on Saturday night, and it was cool. And yeah, I did. I noticed that, and it was that's obviously a massive spot to have that on during that game. And the Americans are glued to those games as well, because they are the wild card playoff games, and they're there's no simultaneous broadcasts. You get to see every single game, so it's a huge, huge spot. And I think a lot of people tuned into that game as well when the comeback actually started to happen from the Texans,
and that's when the ad came on, wasn't it? Oh, brilliant! Look, that's great. That's all huge spots. But look, I tweeted about this. Nothing shows the lack of interest in Ireland more so than the Sunday Independent writing an article about this fight, getting the name Donald Cerrone's name wrong. They called him Michael Cerrone, and they also said it was taking place on January 16th instead of January 18th. Like, that's the mainstream sports media in this country. Like, I don't know how else to exemplify how little it's kind of having a reverberation over here at the moment. That all could change. I'm sure the YouTube video has gone some ways into the YouTube interview has gone some ways into stimulating interest. But still, I mean, across the board, would you say people are now chomping at the bit to see Conor McGregor v. Donald Cerrone on January 18th?
No, well, not here as we're talking about. No, it's very quiet, and I think maybe the fact BT Sports as well have obviously going to be showing the fight here in Europe and pay-per-view in the UK and Ireland. They've actually started pumping up the broadcasts during their big games over the festive period as well. Might create a little bit of interest I've seen that a huge amount over on
you BT. Were saying, yeah.
Every soccer match that's been on, it's been on 2-3 times. They've mentioned it actually on the broadcast as well during the commentary. But yeah, like people here aren't particularly interested in it. One or two, you know yourself, and people start going, oh, you're looking forward to McGregor. Is who's this guy, Cerrone? The usual sort of questions we get in a build-up to a fight, but you're not really getting that as much as we used to in the past. And I think when anyone sort of mentions Conor's name, as we've said over the last year, they don't really give a shit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very much a 180 of what it used to be 4 or 5 years ago. And I don't feel any buzz for it. I think it's very, very, very quiet in Ireland, and I'm not sure it's going to go down too well with the Irish public here.
Look, you know, we were talking about this before. We should say where we are. We are in Dun and Crescenza in Dundrum.
Yeah, very small.
Noel's neck of the woods. Noel didn't even know it was a thing.
That's true.
Unfortunately, recommended Starbucks again. But what you were saying there about the media to me on the way up here. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Paul Kimmage went to McGregor fights. Ken Early used to go to McGregor fights.
Yeah.
None of these guys are going to this fight.
None of them, no.
And they're the big names in sports writing in this country.
Yeah,
you know?
Our outlet is neither. We're not going to be covering the event.
MMA Fighting is our outlet.
Yes, this outlet here. Obviously the outlet I work for here in the Republic of Ireland. It's across the board, Petey, and you know,
I'd say, look, I can imagine Pundit Arena will send someone over. I can imagine the MacLife will definitely be there. Obviously, because Conor. You know, I don't even know if Severe are going to have people there.
No,
you know?
I wouldn't bet on it. But like, yeah, it's just like, what do you say anymore? Because we've pushed so hard, obviously, for, you know, I think we were getting inroads maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and it's just sort of fallen flat in its face again.
But it's not all that surprising for a McGregor fight.
Not.
You know,
it's not.
With everything that's gone on, it's not that surprising for me. But we need to talk about these interviews. Huge, of course, huge amount of traction on these interviews. I guess the positive as I took from Conor's interview is he looks in great shape. And, like, you know, he sounds very positive. Like, he's saying he wants Usman. He's saying Habib is scared. You know, the negatives are I don't really believe him. You know, like, I mean, I used to, when I saw him being interviewed, it was so off the cuff. It felt like there was so much wit, charm, charisma. And there was no funny lines in these interviews. It was very
forced,
very serious.
Did you find it forced at parts?
McGregor, no, I just found him very cautious to what he usually is, you know? I mean, he's saying the right things. Like, he's in the shape. Like, he looks in great shape. All this stuff. But I don't believe it the way I used to believe it. Like, I can remember I interviewed him in 2014 or 2015. And he was telling me he's going to be a 3-weight division champion in the UFC.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds crazy now. Back then, I was like, I believed him when he said to me. Because you knew he believed it. I don't know. Like, he might believe it himself. But it's the same thing as I got from the Ariel interview back in for ESPN 3 months ago. The same thing I heard when I listened to that Tony Robbins interview. I was like, he's saying all the right things, but I'm just not buying it.
Yeah, I agree. That air of
I could be wrong.
The air of invincibility is gone.
It could be marred. Like, I mean, my opinion could be based on the fact that we had more access to him back then. We saw him at the height of his power, but certainly
no, I agree.
It's not the same vibe,
it's not,
right?
It's definitely not the same vibe. I think that air of real sort of assurance and invincibility and what he's going to do and how he's going to set it out. But I'll tell you, you know, the one interesting thing where I actually did sort of think, you know, he had a little bit of a laugh when he mentioned Justin Gaethje. And
he didn't say anything about him. He didn't have a funny line about him. He was like, oh, yeah. Justin says a lot or something. And then Oscar starts laughing and he laughs.
Right. But what I think is, right, maybe
he used to say like things
moment,
like
he's just wants to get this fight out of the way and be serious, right? That's, you know, he's had one fight in the octagon in 3 years, right? He needs this win. We know how much he needs this win. Maybe he'll loosen up a little bit after this, because there is a lot of pressure on him going into this. You know, he talked about, you know, Gaethje as well. As I mentioned there, he mentioned, you know, Gaethje's, you know, bushings are being pushed by what I'm saying. He thinks online and stuff. He's taking to heart. And he saw a little grin on his face when he said that. But
where was the funny lines? Where's about, like, why don't we give Uriah's chin a round card and make it walk around the octagon? Like, it's not... That's hilarious. Yeah. Like, where is the comedy? Where is the quick mind?
I think he's feeling the pressure. You know, I've said that, and I think that's what a lot of the interview was. It was as if as though he's a massive, massive chip on his shoulder, more so than normal. He's a point to prove. I found, you know, points of it, very frustrated, maybe, is probably the word to use.
That's a good point.
You know, I think he's ruled out the Masvidal fight if we want to go down that line. I think he's, as you said there, three-weight world champion. You know, he got very, very sort of excited when Oscar asked him about Usman. The gold and the Usman. And I think it's more, I actually think it's probably maybe a more winnable fight for him.
Usman?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The Masvidal, I'm not sure.
I think he's a mile away from that title conversation, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I think he is. And I think, you know, I don't want to see him go to welterweight, as I tweeted earlier on. I think there's too much to do with 55. Yeah, let him fight Leon. That'd be a good one. But, I just found...
What did you find? The positives that you took, he was talking about Gaethje and stuff like that.
At least he took responsibility, you know. And, you know, he was very much sort of... contradicted himself from what he said in the RLA interview. He said, "Ariel, you know, there was resentment towards the camp." So, listen, let's hope that's been washed away from Conor's point of view.
He said that it was his own lack of commitment that made him feel that way. In fairness, when he talked to Ariel, he was saying, like, you know, it's he felt slighted, you know, by Kavanagh saying that he hadn't watched the fight, and by Kavanagh saying. That I can't remember what else it was, but we have Kavanagh's interview to talk about as well. But that's the one that, like, I mean, I've talked about this before, the Khabib fight, and everybody was jumping down my neck, and then the silence from the camp doesn't fill me with confidence. Like, we got one of two interviews before these two interviews.
Yeah.
One was Roddy with us, the other one was Keane Cowley with Severe before his fight with Brave. That silence was never a staple of a McGregor camp. In fact, he was in so many publications, it felt like you couldn't get away from him. You know what I mean? Like, you're trying to get away from him.
Yeah.
Look, I understand that maybe this is a different process. That is his website. He is obviously making money off putting his interviews out there and not doing them for anyone else. Like, that big Paramatch sponsor there at the front says to me that they're a big sponsor ahead of this camp. That also carried on the John Kavanagh interview. So... You know, he's monetizing the media from his camp. Yeah, that's fair enough.
But I do agree with you.
I just want to finish this point. I have great respect for Oscar. I said it before. He's one of the bright young stars in this media game. But it's not the same McGregor talking to the MacLife as it is him talking to everyone else there.
No.
You know, like, there's even cuts in the McGregor interview that we can see. Like, there's visible cuts, like, at the end of answers.
And in John's one as
well. And I'm like, what? I'd love to see what's happening there. You know, like, what did he get a bit more passionate about something there? It's just not the same. And has he lost that level of comfort that we saw? That where he's speaking off the cuff, where he's joking, where he's effortlessly making these one-liners, these puns. Like, has he lost that level of comfort that he used to have with the media?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's where the Khabib loss. That's where it comes from. And things got so dark so quickly with that fight and the whole build up to that fight.
And afterwards.
And obviously, you know, him being in the spotlight here in Ireland and being, you know, obviously in the US as well. So that's where I think the serious element has come in here. He's realised that he has to go out here and make, not just a win, a statement. And, you know, when John's talking, we'll get to John's in a minute, but he's talking about four or five rounds. That doesn't fill me with a lot of confidence either, to be honest with you. So I think you're dead right in what you said there when we get to speak about John. And his interview, but it was just sort of weird. He goes, you know, he also said, here's some direct quotes from Conor, I made the changes.
That kind of goes, you know, with what John was saying, right?
Yeah, it sort of links in back, and then he said, you know, I have a strong team behind me that are pushing me, guiding me the right way, and I'm guiding myself, which is the main thing. This is, you know, in a situation like that, you know, from most fighters I'd speak to over the years, and I'm sure you're on the same boat, that they look for a leader. They look for the guidance. It's not.
It's
that
usually
way
so much respect. Like, it's nearly like if you listen to Stylebender talking about, if you listen to the Stylebender talking about Eugene Behrman, he's like reveres him. Like, it's like you're talking about his dad nearly.
I don't think it's in this case. I think
like Eugene Behrman. I can remember. I'm pretty sure he said this on the record, and apologies if he didn't. But I can remember I was speaking to him about John Jones and Stylebender, because obviously they have this beef going. And I was like, I asked him the question on the interview. Yeah, it's in the interview. And I say to him, do you ever get afraid that you're going to lose control? And he goes, all the time. I worry about it and I think about it all the time. And he goes, but he goes, if it ever happened, a situation like John Jones happened with him where he's acting like, out like he is, I'll just have a few lads beat the shit out of him down the gym. Three of them, throw him in a room, beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Like, that is the type of fear you need to have for your coach. Like, well, a healthy respect,
I know, it's like, you know,
and a healthy reverence, you know?
Yeah, and it's like the same with Eddie Alvarez and Frankie Edgar with Mark Henry. They look at him as a father figure.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He's like his son. He says it to him. And I think it's the same with, you know, a lot of the coaches we know. So I found that...
There's some red flags, right?
That's a huge red flag for me.
Here's another one, right? He says to Oscar at one stage, he goes, about a year ago, I started to take things seriously. In the last year, he smashed a guy's phone in April... He hit a guy in a bar in April, and there's other things we can't talk about that's happened in the last year. I mean, do you feel as though he's been in the gym diligently for the last year?
Well, I wouldn't say a year. I'd say the last...
It's hard to believe, right, with all this shit going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'd say since the summer. I'd say 6 months.
Yeah.
Late summer. Sort of from what we'd see here in the Irish media and the allegations and things like that, you would think that maybe he's got his act together since maybe July or August. So I don't know where he's getting the year from, because it certainly didn't seem to be the case.
But we were questioning this time last year. We were questioning if he'd ever fight again. You know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, that's it. So listen. Hopefully, it's
a lot
changed.
Of questions. A lot even of more questions than answers coming from the interview.
I think so. Yeah. I do. Definitely agree.
John Kavanagh. Let's move on to John. The huge, hugely polarizing interview in the sense that. Let's start with the positives. He's saying that Conor's the best he's ever seen him. He's confident he can get the finish. He's confident Conor can compete at 155 for that title again. Once again...
He's confident he's going to go to championship rounds.
Yeah. I mean, that's all positives, I guess. But the negative is I'm left confused as to what John's role is in the camp after that. Because he says that Conor is basically doing this whole thing. He's saying their job is to get out of his way so he can do things. And when Conor has made a point of saying that the lack of regiment and structure led to his downfall in the Khabib camp, and Owen Roddy has also said that to us, you're leaving him to organise his whole camp.
Yeah.
I feel like that's stressful thing to do.
Well, it's very contradictory to what Roddy said. Roddy said to us and RTU that he got the discipline back and it's a more regimented training regime. And then John's come out and said, you know, it's up to Conor. I thought that quote was absolutely fascinating.
And he doesn't want to train, he doesn't have to train or something.
The other quote, you know, all of us getting out of his way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm actually a little bit flabbergasted still. That I'm listening to that again, because
look, I put this out, right? He makes it very clear in that interview that Conor is at the helm of this camp.
Yeah.
And I put that out there. I'm like, well, you know, last time he said the structure was a problem, and then everyone's like, I think he's been misinterpreted. That's a video interview.
No, he hasn't
you
been misinterpreted.
You watch the interview, you listen to the question, listen to him answer.
He said on more than one occasion.
Oh yeah, several times
about it. All of us getting out of his way. Then he said Conor knows more about fighting than all of us put together, which I think might be a little bit disrespectful to some of the lads.
Yeah, of course. Did you hear Faraz Zahabi talking about this? He did an interview about
it. No, I didn't hear Faraz.
Faraz said, if it is a case where John is saying that this guy knows more than all of us, it's terrible. He goes, like, even when you're building an aircraft, right, take it away from fighting.
It's about the confidence.
The same person that works on the left engine can't work on the right engine, because he might have a flaw on that left engine, and if he does the same thing in the right engine, it'll be a problem. He also says that when he's working with GSP, he'll come at it in a different way. He won't be like, you know, it's more of a communication process where he says, this is what I'll add in, this is what I'll add in. But he says, at no point does he feel like he's not contributing something. Like, you know, he feels as though every time when there's a leader, when they walk into the gym, Faraz is saying what's happening. Faraz is telling them what drills we're doing, what we're doing today, this is sparring, blah, blah, blah.
It needs to be structured. Like, fighters, I think, look for that in a coach. Is they want that regiment in place, even with Paul and Duke. You know, it's very much, okay, we're doing our pad session at 2 p.m., then we're going to go, you're going to go off with Daniel Vanderlei, you're going to do jits for three rounds.
Look at the best fighters in the world. Israel Adesanya right now, Jorge Masvidal and Mike Brown.
Yeah.
Like, all of these people...
But fighters need direction, and I think Conor's at
that's what I'm saying. All of them.
I think he's, you know, remember I spoke maybe, you know, last year and a half ago that I wouldn't have minded seeing Conor maybe go off on a different route and do something else. And, I still sort of think that, because...
This has made me kind of feel that a bit more.
It's a good fresh start. It's a good guidance. It'd be good discipline. It'd be something that would, you know, obviously regiment him in the right way, because he's clearly a guy who needs to be regimented, and I think, you know, he's admitted that in the past, you know, that, you know, keeping him in the gym, that's when he's at his best, at his most focused, and you know, I just worry. I worry after hearing comments like that.
This is the thing,
there's
right?
a lack of real leadership, I think.
Here's the thing as well. This was another quote that was said to be misinterpreted by the greatest sports journalist in Ireland, Paul Kimmage, which so I definitely
doubt that there's any misinterpreting here. Like, I believe that Kavanagh said this and then later regretted it, because he says this. Kimmage asked him, like, you know, would you do, like, you know, what's next for Conor? He says, I'd have to be convinced to go again. And then Kimmage says, really? And Kavanagh says, direct quote, yeah, I love him. I love the whole journey we've had, but I'd need a good why. It might be Diaz again because he promised that fight. It might be a rematch with Khabib. But if it was just, well, they want me to fight that guy, I think I'd say, I wish you the best. Here's a quote from the Oscar interview. I think his motivation is even more because the Diaz fight was definitely okay. We're going to train hard for 4 months. I want to get that rematch. I shouldn't have lost it the way I lost. I think that was the motivation and the mentality. This one is different because it's not a rematch against Khabib. It's just a fight. So he just said, like, I'm not going to do it if it's just a fight. And now he's doing just a fight.
Yeah.
Like, this is very mixed messages. And we're not doing our job if we don't bring this up, because it's very contradictory and there's no complete line. There's no definite thing that we really know about this camp at the moment.
It's confusing for the fighter as well, which I think is the most sort of detrimental thing if he starts hearing those things.
Conor referenced that in his interview with Ariel. Yeah. He says that, you know, he felt slighted by that. And I guess that's why... Yeah. It was misinterpreted all of a sudden.
He said similar things, and I think that when he did the True Geordie interview and admitted he hadn't spoken to Conor since the fight, and that was, I think, sometime in March or April. Yeah. So that was interesting as well.
So again, that would fly in the face of the I've been preparing for a year.
That's what I'm saying, and there's been a lot of obviously making up doing here. And, you know, is that a good thing as well? That's another thing when I go back and look at that. You know, all this resentment that was there, and he felt slighted, as you said, and... You know, is that a good thing? You know, can you make up a relationship like that, in a 6 month period?
I don't know.
I think it's tough, man. I really do. And I
look,
think
they know each other better than we know them.
Of course.
So you'd hope so. Like, at the end of the day, when this fight was announced, I was like, it's a great fight for Conor. I still think it's a great fight for Conor in terms of the matchup, the style matchup. But these haven't. I thought the more I'd hear from him, the more promising it would seem.
Confidence you get.
I don't.
I feel the opposite after the weekend, yeah. And yeah. I think as we mentioned earlier on, the 4 and 5, you know, John Kavanagh has never, I don't think, gone outside of 2 rounds in his predictions. Yeah. What does that say?
I don't know what it says. I'm really confused.
You know, it is confusing. You know, does it say that he wants him to go a few extra rounds to get back into the groove? Does it say that he wants, that he wants Conor to showcase more of his skills? I don't know what it says. And I just did. You know, it's all a bit of a clusterfuck at the moment. And in terms of how you're thinking, but I guess that's the intrigue with Conor as well. And man, he's probably lapping this shit up. People
just laughing
on Twitter, laughing at us. But you know, I think there is there's definitely more of a serious element this year. And I think maybe everything that's gone on, and he's feeling the pressure a little bit, and rightly so. And he should be feeling the pressure because it's a career defining moment. If he loses this fight, it's very hard to look at a way back for Conor McGregor. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, the Diaz fight's always going to be there, right?
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I think they're going to look at. Masvidal next ahead of that. But anyway, listen.
No, but if he loses.
Yeah, if he loses, yeah, it's obviously there. Yeah. But
I can't see him finishing his career without that trilogy fight.
Forget about it. I don't see it.
Like, I still feel like, to be honest, like, I still feel as though it's that much of a good style matchup for Conor that he should win. I'm still confident. Like, I still think he will win at the moment. But that didn't fill me with confidence.
Yeah. I agree. I think he should win the fight. Whereas Cowboy, we don't really know where he's at in his career.
See, this is the
moment.
Thing I was also thinking about. Cowboy does this every single one of his camps. Like, he's always the main lad, is he not?
Cowboy?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, he is that bad motherfucker ranch. He just brings a lot of lads out there.
That's what he does. That's what he does, you know. And yeah, well, Cowboy's similar enough to that. But yeah, well, then you have Tony as well, who does the same thing up in Big Bear. And, you know, he brings... But Tony does...
Different mindset.
Tony does have a head coach. He's someone...
Yeah.
Someone tell him to do, and I think he respects that. But it's just odd. You know, man, I don't know.
More questions than answers,
and I'm not filled with confidence, especially after hearing John.
If I could ask John one question about it, it would be, why did you let him fight with a broken foot against Khabib?
Yeah.
If that was the case, and if something like that happened again during this camp, would you pull him? And would he listen to you if you said, Conor, you can't take this fight?
Yeah. I'd probably ask him, why did Conor question the tactics potentially in that fight? In that
I think Connor's answered that, hasn't he? The defensive thing, you know, we should have focused on his strengths more.
I thought it was very odd going to kicking a wrestler in the first round, a grappler.
Well, look, we all can't have Noel McGrath in our corners.
That's it. You all can't have me. Takedown expert.
Right, right, let's get on with our first interview of the day. The prospect list is back. My European prospect list has proved quite lucrative for people to be named on over the last 2 years. 60% of the 2018 list went on to sign for major promotions. 50% of the 2019 list so far have gone on to sign for major promotions. This year, the featured fighter, the poster boy, if you will, of the European prospects list is none other than Cage Warriors lightweight champion, Joey Herbert. Thanks for that, Noel. He seems to be on the verge of signing for the UFC. It seems all very close. So we caught up with the Black Country Banger ahead of a big 2020, and we got his thoughts on whether it will be a possibility for him to get his UFC debut at UFC London on March 24th. So we'll be back in a few minutes to talk about what happened over the Christmas and to have a look at that prospects list. Thank you very much. Finally, we are joined by the man that we can reveal as the featured prospect to watch in 2020. It is the Canon. The Black Country Banger, the Cage Warriors lightweight champion, Mr. Joy Herbert. It feels like something big is coming in 2020, Joy. Do you feel the same way as we feel?
I'm feeling very happy still. I hope something big's coming, mate. But I heard nothing yet. I'm still waiting on the phone call, to be honest with you.
They like to keep you guys waiting, as from my experience.
That's what I'm thinking, bro. Doing my head in, mate. I'm telling you.
Is it fair to say that 2019 was the best year of your career?
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. Yeah. Obviously, winning the Cage Warriors World Title, you know, top belt, you know, like former, it's been held by, you know, Conor McGregor, Fish Gold, you know, some top guys who held that belt. So I got my hands on it, you know, it's one of the best things in my career so far, but there's still a lot more to come.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And like, I mean, it feels like you had so many highlights in that year. Like the Jack Grant fight was unbelievable. Steve O'Keefe, one of the best grapplers going. You got through his early storm and then KO'd him. And then, of course, Carrizozo to finish out the year? With the first round knockout, and then we're like, you've done everything you need to do. You've knocked off the top contender. You've claimed the belt. You've beaten a UFC veteran. What was your highlight out of that year?
My best performance. I wouldn't say my best performance, but I like the old key fight I did. I felt like, you know, I was watching his fights before, and he was getting people to the ground, and in the first round, he was just like smashing them, boom, getting the sub. Quick thing, you know what I mean? First round, quick thing, and then whereas it happened in the fight, he got me on the ground, and you know, I weathered the storm. About three different sub attempts, I got out of them, and then I got to my feet and, you know, finished the fight. So I felt like, you know, that showed that, you know, I didn't my improvements, especially going to Team Renegade, and the improvements I made in such a short space of time, and, like, you know. That was my favorite moment of the team. I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but that was my best fight anyway. My favorite fight, I've got to say that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, what was really impressive to me about the O'Keefe fight was I thought the Grant fight was unbelievable. But the thing that was crazy about the O'Keefe fight was he completely dominated the fight up until he gave you one opportunity, and that's all you needed. You took the only opportunity he gave you. It's pretty crazy to see a guy who has that kind of finishing intent. Like, you seem to be able to smell blood better than nearly any other prospect in Europe at the moment.
Well, like you say, yeah, that's how I felt it went. You know, he was dominating the fight on the ground. But you know what? I knew it was going to go that way. But, like, I stayed safe. And I just waited for my opportunity, and I just, it was there. And as soon as I got it, bang, it was over. No missing.
Absolutely. Now, I know you said at the top of this interview that you haven't heard anything. It does feel as though everybody is feeling this is going to happen for you. Like, even Graham Boylan has not stopped saying it. This man is ready. Even Paddy Pimblett, like a former champion with Cage Warriors, a guy who wants to be in the UFC himself, he was like, Joy's ready to go. He could go tomorrow. Like that there's no doubt about that. And then even Leon Edwards, who we still don't know if he's going to headline it, but it seems like him and Tyron Woodley could headline this card. He's saying it too, your teammate at Renegade. Are you confident at this given moment that it will happen, or are you kind of getting that sinking feeling?
No, I'm not getting a sinking feeling. I feel it will happen, but I just don't. It might not happen as soon as we're expecting. But I'm thinking they might just ring and say, yeah, you can get in. But they're saying, obviously, they've got to cut a few guys before I can get in, and that's what they're saying. I understand it's a business at the end of the day, and, you know, they can't just keep employing people as such. Like, so they have got to cut guys and keep their roster at a certain amount of people, fighters, sorry. So I understand that, but I think they'll get me in, to be honest with you. I'll be ready anyway for when they call.
Yeah,
that's what you got to do. You got to stay ready, yeah. So,
I feel like it would be so perfect for you to debut on the London card if Leon does get that headline fight with Woodley, because then you become so visible just by association. Because you know Leon talked you up so much, you've talked Leon up so much about the wrestling classes you've done with him. But I mean, if he's there on fight week and he's saying, "Hey, watch out for my teammate. He's unbelievable. He's the Cage Warriors champion. This is his first fight. He's a knockout artist." I feel like that's the perfect way for you to enter the UFC fray, you know?
Most definitely. Get my name about, and then get me big fights, which I want. And then big names, man.
Yeah, and it would be the beginning of the Birmingham Revolution, which we talked about the last time. I mean, it does feel like that area, and Renegade in particular, is just producing so much talent. Like, I feel like UFC London's a great jump-off point to showcase that to the world.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, it's coming back to that again, what you were saying about like the SBG, like O'Connor, and then all the other, you know, he bought all them through, didn't he? Anything like with Leon. And then he's going to start, you know, bring people through as well. And then they'll show, it like shows how much talent he's in Birmingham on the Midlands at the minute. And I feel we're the best team in Europe, to be fair.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with it. It's hard to argue with that point, man. Really.
So, that's what I'm saying. We've got like some really top guys there. We've got guys that have just joined as well that are top level guys too. So, you know, takeover continues.
Yes, absolutely.
I believe.
One thing I love about you, I think it's fantastic. I love seeing prospects that still have a full-time job. Like, as in, you are beating all this ass as well as doing a 9-to-5 job. I think that is unbelievable. Can you tell me a bit about your job?
Yeah, man. It's just I'm scaffolding. I've been scaffolding since I was 17. Man. It's just been a graft, like, to be fair. Absolute graft, but... you just get used to it, to be honest with you. I mean, I just, what did I do this morning? I got up at like 4:15, I had to leave at 6, start work at 7 in the yard, you know, unloading the lorries, going to the job, grafting on the job, get back to the yard about 4:30, then boom, got home about 4:30, and quick little chill out and that, or something to eat and that, then go. I'm going to fly to the gym about 7. Yeah. I'll be at the gym to about 9 and that, and then get home and repeat it again. But it's one of them ones, isn't it? At the end of the day, you got to earn money, innit? You got to live. My missus is pregnant now, innit? So
congratulations.
Thanks very much. She's got the baby's due in June, so boy, I got to eat, man. And I got to feed other people as well.
I really respect that.
Yeah, man, it's all good, man. I enjoy it, you know what I mean? In a way, I enjoy it, but like, obviously, I don't enjoy getting up early in the morning and that. And,
who does?
Like, who does, innit? Like, but it's good, innit, when you're earning an honest living, you know what I mean? It's a good thing.
Did you ever take, like, I know a lot of guys who are MMA fighters who also work full-time. Did you ever kind of give it a go of making it your full-time occupation, or have you always kept this job throughout your fighting career?
Yeah, but I've always kept the job. I've always kept the job because I know I could probably start doing PTs and stuff like that, but I don't know what else to do, to be honest. I just got on scaffold. That's all I know how to do, and fight basically. So that's all I know. But one day, it'll definitely be it'll pay off, and I'll be doing it full time. But I say that to you, but I do like, you know, because at this level I fight at, I have to like have like 4 or 5 weeks off before the fight. So what I did in my last fight against Cabezosa, 5 weeks before the fight, I had them completely off. So a lot was obviously like training twice a day, and you know, down at Renegade in the morning and night and stuff. So you know, I still have to have time off. I flattened him on Saturday, and then I was back on the tools on Monday. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's just what I'm saying. And I was by my boss. He's like, "Yo, get that job done." Like, "Hey, but I believe you're bloody K world champ." You know what I mean?
That's amazing.
That's how he's.
What do you think you're better at? Are you better at scaffolding or fighting? You told me you just know how to do
both. Oh, fighting, mate. Fighting.
Okay. Maybe that's where your boss is.
It's not
going
to that one.
But you know, if the UFC comes along, Joy, like, do you feel like that would be a good time to step away from scaffolding, or do you believe that will be a constant? You'll always have that in the background, no matter.
Nah. I'll definitely be down full time with the UFC, 100%. You have to anyway with them level guys. You know what I mean? You can't have a job on the side, really. I don't think, especially not like a full-time manual job like that. I'd definitely be doing it full-time. But with all them bonus checks I'll be getting anyway, I don't need to work, big man.
Yes, you know what I mean? Yes. Oh, yo, the only time I ever see you as a braggadocious person or kind of swagger to you is after you knock someone out. I never see you talking smack that much. I never see you trying to rile people up. And sometimes I feel as though, like, I see guys with much less plaudits, way worse records acting like that. And I feel like sometimes when someone has a full-time job, when someone has, you know, as you have a child on the way at home, it makes them just a lot more mature. Do you feel as though, like, having a job and having things going on outside the cage itself, does that make you kind of a more grounded person? Because I sometimes feel that about you when I watch you.
I think you've probably hit the nail on the head there. You know, I've got like you said, it's more. I'm just like, I don't know how to explain it now, but what you said is right. Yeah, you know what I mean. It's like, I think people have probably got too much time on their hands, whereas I ain't got the time. Like my missus always like, you need to start posting. You need to be posting on Instagram. You know, you think I'm like, well, I'm just coming at work. I'm gonna have a quick coffee and a little piece of toast and that before I gotta go to the gym. I can't be arse putting in stuff on Instagram or saying all these shit to people. I ain't bothered about it, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's one of them ones, isn't it? But like I say, I'm 31 as well, you gotta think as well, like, and a lot of these people are younger than me.
You look so young. Egos and that, like,
I know, mate, you know, they say black don't crack, you know what I mean?
I've got freckles, man.
it's one of them ones, mate. Like, obviously, I just can't, just whatever, innit? Like, at the end of the day, I just need to let my fighting do the talking, really.
Yes.
And I feel like a lot of people annoy me when they're just, like you said, like people, like less, what do you say, less plaudits, is that what you said?
Yeah, they have less
achievements and stuff.
Exactly, yeah, absolutely. Like, I feel
it just,
like,
winds me up as well, so that's why I don't even get into it with people on Instagram and stuff, because it just winds me up, because they don't know what they're fucking talking about, basically. And you don't fuck all, you've fought no one. So, exactly, you can't argue with stupid, can you? So I just don't get into it with people, basically. So I feel.
Even if you're not on Instagram, Joy, I got to tell you, you're an amazing interview. You're cracking me up here every time. But yeah, absolutely. But just a final question. You know, we talked about, like, how much would this change your life if that contract does come with a child on the way? As you said, you have a full-time job now that you'd be able to quit and focus fully on fighting. Like, how much of a life-changing situation would that be?
Trust me, it'd be amazing. Absolutely, it'd be amazing, man. So, the buddies as well, I'll have to concentrate on the MMA so much more as well. It'd just be like my job. So I'll be like doing it. I'll just be doing it like as I'm going to my job in the morning. It'd improve me like tenfold as well. So it just changed my life. You know what I mean? And people around me as well. I'll just come for the day, which is coming very soon. I'm still believe it.
I believe it too, my friend, and I hope it comes very quickly. A pleasure to speak to you, as always, my friend, and all the best this year, okay?
Okay, brother. Thanks for the phone call, bro. Appreciate
you. No hassle. I'll talk to you soon when you have that UFC London fight booked, right? And what a pleasure it was to speak to Joy. I feel like he will have a really big year. We're all pushing for him to get that debut on the London card. It's been an amazing resurgence for him under the Cage Warriors banner, hasn't it, Noiler?
Unbelievable, man. And I think the one thing you can take from Joy is just the improvements he's made since losing to Reese McKee. We've seen a little bit of Everton from him, and that resolve and that striking has come on tenfold. Big, big year for Joy, in my opinion. One of the top prospects in the promotion.
In Europe,
yeah, definitely.
I think it would also help him if Leon does get that fight with Woodley. Him being on the card and them being together all fight week would push him to a new stratosphere.
It always does, I think, when guys, teammates and guys who know each other are on the same training camp going into a fight. It creates, obviously, a feel-good factor, and there's a lot of momentum going in, and they're working towards the same goal, effectively. And to have Leon's experience as well, and making his debut under him, with him on the same card, would be invaluable.
I'm just going to go through this list very quickly. I know all of you have already seen this, so, I don't know if all of you said, but it's certainly out there if you want to. Joy Herbert, obviously the featured fighter on this year's list. Next is Svetlana Gotsik from the Ukraine. She's fantastic. She's only 23, 13-4, won the WWFC title in September, I believe it was. Another guy I'm really, really excited about, and this recommendation came from Asha from MMA Nyit, and I kind of went into a bit of a rabbit hole with this guy after he sent me Shamzat Chimiev. Unbelievable. Fights at 170 and middleweight. He's 6-0 from Sweden. Only a young fella. He's fighting for the Brave title, as reported by MMA Nyit. I think it's in February. So, huge guy. Just watch out for him. He's got a beautiful uppercut knockout last year. Really, really good. I put Morgan Charrier on the list, even though I feel as though it's a really tough ask to see him beating Mads Burnell. He's got the following. He's from France. It's a big area. It's a big neck of the woods. And really, if he does manage to somehow beat the unbelievable Mads Burnell, he will.
Yeah, of course.
He'll be knocking right on the door for the UFC. And yeah. I feel like he's a big commodity as well. Cesare Kesic, who got onto our radar through KSW. Alan Murphy speaks very highly of this dude. He had 4 wins in 2019 after a 2-year layoff, 11-0. Really, really good middleweight there. And look, with Askham cutting through the division the way he is, Kessick could be a guy who's fighting for that title next year. This is the heaviest record on the whole list is a fella called Kusian Askhabov, who is the WWFC bantamweight champion. He used to be the featherweight champion. His twin brother is now the featherweight champion. He's 20-0. Still lacking some really big tests. I think his best win is probably against Donovan Desme. He needs a big marquee win, I'd say, before the big international banners come after him. Mandy Baum, an SPG Ireland fighter. I didn't actually realise this. She is 6-0, and she won the TKO flyweight championship earlier in 2019. The last TKO champion that we featured on this list was none other than Cyril Gane. So maybe the German will have a similar trajectory into the big leagues next year. Modestus Bukauskas, I feel like light heavyweight was a tough one, but taking out Martin Hamlet at Night of Champions. Martin Hamlet, I thought he was he was a given for this list this year, but Modestus KO'd him. And then Bet Nasiglia before the end of the year, and Graham Boylan's calling for the UFC. Usually Graham Boylan is telling you you're ready. The contract offer is coming pretty swiftly afterwards. Mansour Shutiev from ACA, he's fighting for the flyweight title in February as well, I believe, against another unbeaten prospect. He's really, really good, very, very young. And finally, Stephanie Egger, you might remember her from defeating King Reina earlier this year at Rising. She also won the Best Throw Award at this year's ADCC 2019 when she got a Sionag on Gabby Garcia. So, no mean feat there.
Gabby.
She was meant to fight on Aries Fighting Championship on their debut show earlier in 2019.
But it
didn't happen. So I think with a promotion like that, they are kind of positioning themselves as a feeder league for the UFC between Africa and maybe France and Europe. So I feel like that's a good place for the Swiss fighter to be in.
Rug.
It's quite we wish he was European. Unfortunately, he's not. No heavyweights on this year's list. I didn't feel like there was a definite heavyweight in Europe that I was like, oh, he's brilliant.
I think the ones even in the UFC you're sort of gone, are they there thereabouts? Like, it's tough well, like, gauge
last year's how good last year's heavyweight prospect was Cyril Gane. He was 2-0. Yeah. That will show you the lack of talent in the neck of the
woods. That's my whole point, and he's in the UFC now. Yeah. So it's tough to really gauge where European mixed martial arts heavyweights are. So yeah, don't blame me for that one. It's one of the tougher divisions to sort of nail out.
I'd say like this could be one of the lower percentage signs. This is a bit of a diehard absolute hipster kind of look at the prospects. I feel like Joy will be signed.
Yeah.
I feel like that guy Shamzat Chimaev, if he is able to be signed, they should absolutely sign him. But Brave, I'd say have him have a good contract on him if he's fighting for that title. Morgan Charrier, it's a very tough ask with Mads Burnell there at the top of the division.
Yeah.
Mandy Baum maybe, because she's 6-0. That's a big record for a flyweight, right? Like for a UFC flyweight.
Yeah, definitely it is. And I agree with you though in terms of Joy. Like when Graham's coming out saying, you know, and I think
that was Modestus.
You know, he said that to us when we spoke to him in Dublin about Joy after that. You know, it mightn't be now, but it'll be in the next couple of months where something's been resolved. So I think it's probably only a matter of time before Joy gets on that. And maybe they're even negotiating now at the moment. You don't know. With Graham, he plays his cards close to his chest in situations like that, as we well know. So
he absolutely
does. And I hope Joy does deserve it, and I hope he does get that call, because you know, he's a talent. And listen, we need more European fighters in the UFC, and it's great to see him kick on and be so successful in the last 12 months.
Will we take a look at what happened over the Christmas? Now, there was only a few key cards. There was the Bellator Japan card with Fedor v Rampage.
Dinosaurs.
Niall was fucking really looking forward to it. And we also had the Ryzen 20 card, which was absolutely unbelievable. And there was, of course, the PFL. Maybe we'll start there, because it's only really Brendan we're talking about. Another decision win. I mean, you saw the highlights of that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This is a problem. They've just put it on Airsport now. It's less easy for us to watch.
Yeah,
it's more difficult.
So I couldn't watch it. To watch the highlights on it, you know, it's not the live stream online anymore since they're on ESPN. It's
so
a
silly.
Pain in the ass. There's no free prelims. I was scouring around trying to find it. And then
pain
I had to,
the arse.
To literally watch the highlights on their YouTube channel. They just showed a 2-minute package. But Brendan, it was a pretty decisive win. You know, he picked him apart and without getting the finish. And it was you know, a pretty straightforward run-of-the-mill win for Mr. Lachlan. And good to see him win that. But, you know, it's a big, big year, I think, next year for Brendan.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
he's going to have to enter the tournament, kick on and win it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I feel like
a lot of pressure on
him. Like, what's left? Like, is Lance Palmer going to hang around again? Like, he's won $2 million now in 2 years. I mean,
yeah.
I guess he'd be pretty confident he'd win $3 million in 3 years, but I mean,
yeah, I think,
is,
you know,
it
Lance
the UFC
Palmer,
time? Are they going to give him a big contract? Are they going to make him that offer? Does he add much to the featherweight division?
I don't know. It's hard to gauge with Lance Palmer because, you know, Uriah Faber talked about him for years.
Like, I never had any question about Justin Gaethje. I knew he was going in there and he was going to kill people.
Yeah, I think
like
we knew Gaethje did with the leg kick stoppages left and right all over the place in PFL. But, you know, it's a difference with Palmer because, you know, Uriah's talked about him for years and he's an alpha male. And I think he trains a lot with Mark Henry and those guys now as well. So it is. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. But, you know, would he be in the UFC already? I don't know. It's a hard one to judge. It's a hard one to gauge, and I think the only, you know, sort of way we can see that is how hungry he is. If he wants to stick around and win another $1 million of PFL, or if he wants to really go test himself at the highest mixed martial arts elite level featherweights in the world that are in the UFC.
But don't be stupid, Lance. Make sure you get paid, mate.
Yeah,
this is not tiddlywinks. Fedor Emelianenko back to his best. He is the greatest heavyweight in the world at the moment after knocking out another amazing heavyweight who was very relevant, Quinton Rampage Jackson. Your comments, Noel? It was bad.
Barney the dinosaur. That gif I sent you, man. It's
that's not the way I want to see Quinton Jackson, man.
Yeah, I said it for how long? You know, Bellator of all these other young lads, it should be, you know, presenting higher up in their cards, headlining their cards, trying to build stars out of them, and they're putting on this garbage to watch.
Controversial take for me. Fedor looked pretty fucking good.
Oh, well, come on, he tipped him on the top of the head and
he tipped
over.
Him plenty of times on the top of the head.
And, bop, bop, bop. Oh, come on, like, look at Rampage, totally out of shape, big belly on him. You know, Fedor didn't look much better himself, in my opinion. And I know he sort of mentioned, it was taken out of context by some of the reporters backstage, that, you know, he's going to retire. I think he wants one or two more fights to finish off in Russia.
Let's do Brock. Let's do it with Brock.
Yeah, let's just do it. Like, you know...
just end this.
Yeah, just end this misery. That's the heavyweights and the dinosaurs that the Bellator put on these cards, and I don't understand it. Like Rampage as well, like, these guys are way over the hill and way over their best, and I'm not being disrespectful, but, you know,
I mean, it kind of speaks to your your point when Quinton has to cut weight to make heavyweight, yeah. I believe he had to, like, that's... Yeah.
It's not a good crazy. Look. Yeah, it's not a good look for the sport. And I think Bellator really need to get away from this in 2020, and especially in Europe as well, if they really want to, you know, sort of make any sort of play to be, you know, compete with the UFC, because there's just too many stupid fights like this where we're seeing dinosaurs in battle. And, you know, you go watch feckin' some... fucking dinosaur kids program. You probably have
you're running out of steam there on this point.
I am
now.
Yeah, I'm just basically the bottom line is I'm pure fed up with this shit and I think it needs to stop.
All right, that's good. Did you see Michael Venom Page? He absolutely brutalized Shinsho.
I did.
Anzoi, another win over a very good opponent that isn't quite elite, right? Like, I mean, he's very good. Like, Shinsho is good. But
the thing you have to say about Michael is, right, since that loss, he took a little bit of time off. Then he's got back in. And what's that, like, 3 fights in, like, 50 days or something for MVP? Fair play to him.
Activity is...
He's trying to get something to go going together here. You know, I think we really, really need to start him seeing being matched up against the top 2 or 3 now at this stage.
I'm hearing people calling out, like, Mike Morgan, and particularly from WOW TV, calling for daily MVP, too.
Like Mike, but some of his call-outs are a bit crazy.
Like, I mean, I'm not jumping up and down and see that fight. I'll tell you what I would like to see. He was on the same card. Give him Lorenz Larkin.
Love it. That's a great fight. Lorenz is a really good fighter.
He's a great striker.
Totally underrated in his tenure here in the UF when he was in with the UFC as well. And I love that fight. That's a really
haircut.
Good call.
And great haircut.
Yeah, and a really good dude as well. I like him a lot. Yeah, he's a lovely sound guy. Really lovely lad. Yeah, I love that. That's a really good call.
We better have a look at
Lorenz is a good win on that card as well.
Yeah. Very good, but not European, so struck from the record.
Is Lorenz not European? Are we not claiming him now?
No.
All right, fair enough.
Manuel Cape, huge win in the main event of Rising 20, which was a fantastic card. I think anyone who watched it from start to finish will agree. Beats Koya Sakura, the man who knocked out Horiguchi in his last outing, shocked the world, a huge name in Japan. And Manuel Cape now, the bad boy of Risen, who I've been shouting out for a long time.
Yeah, you have, in fairness.
I wanted him to fight Gallagher. I think they're perfect for a matchup, and I still do. But this has blown open the doors for Ryzen. They can now have so many matchups they can possibly make there with Manuel Cape at the top of the division. Tension was on the card as well. Absolutely destroyed some lad.
What age is he? Is he 22 yet?
21 or something.
Crazy young.
Heham and Hamasaki. Great fight there. Mikuru Asakura, another great win. Rina back to winning ways. Tofik Musayev wins the lightweight championship, the lightweight tournament, and beats Patricky Pitbull. Like, I mean, Jesus Christ, that's an impressive win to get there. Like that, I mean, and of course he's one of ours, which is great. Yuri Prohaska as well defends his title over CB Dolloway with a brutal left hook finish. Not surprised by that. We said it on our last show. Yeah. He's going to get knocked out.
He should have taken that suspension.
Yeah. You know, a lot of, like, they're really the main ones from a European perspective. But really, really impressed with Musayev beating Johnny Case and then Patricky Pitbull. That's crazy.
Yeah, they're two big names, man.
And Patricky Pitbull soccer kicked the face off Luis Gustavo in the first round of that as well. Yeah, I really love that card. Actually, I love that on New Year's Eve. Because it's in the mornings and you get it out of the way and then you're able to go and get about your business. If it was just on at 8 a.m. instead of 6, I'd like it even more.
Did you get drunk on New Year's Eve?
Not too bad. We went to, my friend bought a house in City West, so we went over there. It was a great night. Congratulations to Hingo and Emma on their house. But it was great. Great. I had a great Christmas. I got really, really shit-faced for the whole thing, to be honest.
I didn't have one drink on New Year's Eve.
Well, like, I mean, that'll probably make up for you drinking every other day over the course of the year.
Jimmy bollocks, I wish it is.
Yeah, I guess that's everything that happened over the Christmas. So we're going to go to an interview we did with the great Joker himself, Aaron Chalmers, ahead of the Christmas, about Bellator Dublin, which we're gearing up for now in February. It's going to be a big card, one of the biggest card in Ireland to start the year anyway. So we'll have a quick word with Aaron Chalmers, who got some great insight on, you know, James Gallagher and Kiefer Crosby and guys like those kind of rallying around him when he first came into the sport and basically making him feel part of something rather than everyone going, who is this guy? I hate him. And also, I asked him about Fame MMA UK because I feel as though it would not exist if it wasn't for Aaron Chalmers. So we'll be back in about 10 minutes for some shy talk and we'll talk to you then. MMAfighting.com, and I'm with Aaron Chalmers, who takes on Austin Clem at Bellator Dublin on February 22nd. Aaron, a big deal to have you in this neck of the woods. What does it mean to you? I know you spoke about it briefly at the press conference there, and I've seen you at these events in the past. So, I mean, what does it mean for you to finally fight in Dublin at the Three Arena?
Jerry, it's been... do you want to look at the... Just... it's been a long time coming. Like I say, I watched my first show in Dublin, and that's kind of what got us hooked. The fans are amazing. And yeah, what better way to start my career outside of the UK than here? I'm just hoping I get a quality reception, which I'm sure I will.
Yeah, I feel like you have a great kind of kinship with the Irish fighters. I always see you palling around with James and the likes of Kiefer and stuff like that. I mean, have you always got on with the Irish guys?
Do you know, fair play, all the Irish lads, when I first started, them lads you've just mentioned, Kiefer, James, Peter, they always give us a good shout, whereas a lot of people write us off, whereas they just were like, fair play, you're getting in there and doing it, you know what I mean? So yeah, I've had a relationship with them as friends since then. Me and James get on really well. I met James, I was in New York partying with James, so yeah, we've got a good relationship, so it'd be nice to share the card with them, and it's nice to be on a main card in Dublin amongst a lot of Dublin fighters, so I feel very privileged for that.
I actually do remember that when you say that about James, because at the time, of course, you bring a lot of controversy with you wherever you go, and he did come out and say we need to respect that guy. Did that mean a lot to you at the time when he did that?
Well, especially when he said it, I was getting so much hate, do you know what I mean? And I just, like, there was seemed to be all negative, no positive. So for someone who also gets a lot of hate to come out and say that, he understood, do you know what I mean? And like, people were criticising us for doing something that I wanted to do. Fair play, I might have jumped the rankings a little bit, but at the end of the day, if you've got two fighters, one sells 10 tickets, one sells 5,000, who are you going to fucking employ, do you know what I mean?
Do you know anything about Austin Clem, the guy you're fighting? I know he's an American, I know he's had a rapid ascent as a professional, like he has fought a lot in the last year. Do you know anything about him in particular? Do you prepare for a specific opponent, or do you always just worry about yourself?
Do you know what it is? My coach watched him. So my coach is watching me, give us the game plan. I haven't had a chance to watch him yet, but I feel in the past, the fight that I lost, I was more concentrating on what the opponent was going to do, and I was more thinking, oh, he does this. He come to fight night and he didn't do anything that I thought he was going to do, so I'm just going to prepare myself in every aspect. Then there's no corners cut, then whatever he comes out and does, I'll be ready for.
Who are you training? Are you still with Renegade now, or are you with South Shields? I know you're with Alex Unland. Yeah, what's it like? I mean, Unland's a legend of the UK MMA scene, and I know that Team Renegade's a fantastic team as well. What forced the move? Was it just a practicality thing? Or
so when I lost, obviously it hit us hard, and then when I broke it down the travelling I was doing a week, like to Birmingham. Then my girlfriend was in Brighton. I was renovating a house in Newcastle, and I think it was like 25 hours a week just sitting in the car. So I thought, I can't, because I didn't know anything other than Renegade, which was amazing. They were amazing. I thought, I'm going to try it at home. I spoke to Alex, and he was like, I'd love to have you down. He said it's a great challenge for him. Do you know what I mean? Because obviously I was quite new at MMA. So now I live 25 minutes from the gym, and that was it. Just, it was purely for practicality. And when my girlfriend moved up to Newcastle and her daughter and stuff, it just made sense to be there. Do you know what I mean?
You are a new daddy, I believe. What's that been like?
Not yet. Baby's born May the 2nd, so I'm hoping to get two fights in before the fucking madness starts.
What's that like? I mean, does that give you a new kind of motivation to, to obviously earn as much as possible and get an even bigger spotlight, although you're quite used to the spotlight at this stage?
Do you know what it is? It's like, you know, like, I've now got something to fight for. I've now got, even though my missus has got a daughter and stuff, now I've got a baby that we're going to be relying on me for the next 18 years, and it's kind of given us a new lease of life to try and push myself even more. Whereas I feel like in the past, when I first started, I would fight and then just go off for a bit. Whereas now the baby's coming, it's next year is just going to be all about training in family life. That's me now. So long gone are the party days.
I have to ask you this, right, because Jake Smith, you'll know him, a fantastic journalist from Newcastle, he told me that Clem's, as in your opponent's second name, he says to get hit in the clems in Geordie talk is to get hit in the balls. Did you think about that as soon as you were a match with this guy?
Not until you've just said it. And when you said clems, I was like, that's your balls. But yeah, I mean, he can hit us in the balls, he can hit us in the chin, but at the end of the night, I really do think back at 77, I'll knock him out.
How different is that actually without straining your body? Did you feel that like when you were trying to get them catch weights in and stuff like that?
Not so much the catch weights, but when I first went down to 70, I lost a lot of muscle. I was just running, no strength and conditioning. So when I was hitting pads and stuff, when I hit him in the cage, it was just like it felt like there was fucking no power. Do you know what I mean? So I've went back to what I've done at the start. Welterweight, not much weight to cut, and I keep a lot of power. So I'm hoping that I can bring that come fight night.
Final question, Aaron, and I must say, from the media point of view, you have won us over. You came in and you've fought many times. You've taken on hard challenges. But I saw this Fame MMA thing pop up. I know you're a big supporter, but I was like, would this have happened if Aaron Chalmers never went to MMA? I don't know if it would have.
I'm going to be honest, I don't think so, because my manager was a big factor in bringing Fame over to the Newcastle show. I think I've got the ball rolling, and it's good because it gives other people a chance, people that maybe look on the outside thinking I can do it, to see how hard it actually is when that cage door shuts. So on Saturday night, it's kicking off, and I think I might be commentating, but if not, I'll be in the crowd thoroughly enjoying myself.
I think it was very funny because I remember when it was just launched, they were like, and maybe the winner can fight Aaron Chan. I was like, hang on a second, lads. Like, I mean, do people not understand that you have put yourself through a rigorous few camps now at this stage?
This is the thing, like, I think, you know, like, people get ahead of themselves, do you know what I mean? Fair play, a lot of the, like, Sam's been training at my gym, but people do get ahead of themselves, thinking, oh, yeah, I'll fight on Fame, I'm going to be on Bellator, I'm going to be in UFC, but it's not that easy.
It's a different thing, isn't it?
Totally. I didn't fight another reality TV person. I fought a kid who had 35 Thai boxing fights in my first fight. So there's a bit of a difference. I wish I fought a reality TV star because I could give them a few of them a fucking smack, but it never come round to it. But you never know. If the offer is in a few years' time after the Bellator contract, there's a few I wouldn't mind giving a dig.
Just finally, what way do you see this one going, Aaron? Do you have a prediction? You were talking about it there. I mean, you've won by submission, you've won by knockout. What does this one feel like it's going to be?
Joan is, from what I've heard, he's southpaw and he's a wrestler, so it's going to be trying to just avoid takedowns. But then if he takes us on me back, I've been training really hard, you know what I mean? But I'm going to go back to what I like doing best and taking people's heads off.
Thank you so much, Aaron, man. A pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much to the Joker. Aaron Chalmers, a man who was fantastic banter on Twitter, referred to you as Steve 2 weeks ago. I don't know if you saw that. That was brilliant.
Didn't see. What did he say?
He's gone.
Did he?
I love the podcast, lads. I love that co-host Steve you have. Is that his name?
I didn't see that.
He's actually livid about
I'm
this.
I'm not happy.
Aaron, I'm sorry I let the cat out of the bag, my friend.
Sorry.
But we have nothing really to.
He was nice to my face, though. He didn't say anything to me in Dublin.
Oh, you know this is a joke, Niall, yeah?
I don't like jokes. I'd forgive him, it's a new year.
I'd back Chalmers in a fight.
I'll let him off this time.
But we don't really have anything to talk about. So tell me, like, I mean, what became of you this Christmas that made you so teetotal?
Probably lack of fucking money in my bank account. I'm not going to lie to you. I spent a lot in presents and stuff, and I was pretty much.
Oh, I didn't go out. I just drank my house.
Oh no, I didn't even bother. I didn't even bother, man. I was just Stephen's Day. I did have a lot in Stephen's.
You sent us the picture of you in the tracksuit. Respect.
Yeah, you got that. And so I went over on Stephen's Day, across to the wonderful Churchtown stores in Churchtown. In fairness, the lads in there, they love me.
How could they not?
I got about 8 free pints. I'm not joking. Yeah, the lads are saying they're great guys there.
Poor lads getting fired now.
I did do a video for them though, in fairness. So yeah. I think it was sort of even it up. But now they're great guys and they're great.
Full nude.
Great place. Great full new bar. Yeah, shut the fuck up. Did a video for the pub. You can see it in their Instagram page. But
spread them. He's smiling and blushing.
Basically, went over for one of the lads, a couple of pints before the United match. Jer pissed off then, and he goes, oh, I have to go home for my dinner, I'll see you after. So I end up staying around watching the United match on my own. Then a few more of my mates came in by accident. Then I went home for a few hours. One of the lads called over, we had a load of beers, kept drinking. Then I went back over to the Churchtown stores, then over to the Glenside, then back to Jer's. Stumbled home, like literally stumbled home at about 5 a.m.
So in that one night you were in more pubs than I was over the whole Christmas.
Probably, yeah, but I didn't drink much. I didn't actually. That was only the only night. I didn't go out New Year's. Yeah, that was at a few pints on Christmas Eve. Very timid. Very timid.
I didn't have a point at all.
I don't feel great. I never feel good because I'm so unhealthy at the moment. But I feel way better than I normally do in January. which is great.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty all right. I've been trying to detox myself down because I have to wear a suit at this fight and I can't fit into one anymore.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, put on a good stone there over the Christmas. So down 6 pounds already, but it's going to be touch or go.
Yeah, but it's, you know, the thing is, you know, over Christmas and stuff, and you know, people moan, they're going in January, oh, I'm going to do this, going to give it. Fuck your New Year's resolutions, not bollocks quit and stuff. Don't depress yourself at the month. Take it easy. Do what you
fucking
want.
If that suit fit me, I'd be doing absolutely nothing.
It's ridiculous. they're idiots, all these fucking, you know, plonkers going, oh, what's your New Year's resolutions? New Year's resolutions are just fucking for the birds. Like,
well, like,
stop.
It's easy for you to say being so perfect and all, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it probably is, like, but
there's no improvements to be made with you, Noel.
No, there is not. Listen, I don't like people getting themselves in a knot about things in January. Fuck it. You know, wait till February to do that, or end of January.
Well, like, the one thing I take from this is that you're still the same positive guy that you've always been.
I'm trying to be positive. So, listen, it was a quiet one, but, grand. It is what it was.
I got mouldy in me gaff on Christmas Day, and I didn't realise how drunk I was. I think maybe this cocktail kit thing, because I always, whenever we were out in town, we go for dinner, and I always get a cocktail in Roberta's before I go home. It's called a Boilermaker. And Elaine got me all the makings of it.
Jesus.
And I had, like, four of them before I went around to Elaine's gaff. My brother made every one of them. I didn't. I was scuttered, man.
Two glasses of wine on Christmas Day, that was it.
I was walking around the car into a Lions gaff going, you are fucking meldy, mate. Like, you are not going to be able to speak. But I got in, did all right. Stayed awake for about 2 hours and then calmed out, obviously. But glad to see everybody getting involved with the Stevens Day tracksuits. You know, gave us a lot of looks there. Woke up really hungover after all those cocktails and all the beers. And I still gave us three different tracksuits to choose from. And it was an eventful day. Even Reggie had a tracksuit. It was fantastic. But it was a good one. Great to have my little niece, Lucy. She's three, so she's buzzing for it. That adds a lot to it, doesn't it? Like, when they're excited and stuff.
Six or seven of the little fuckers running around and wrecking your head. And, yeah, that's a good crack. Like, but, I was, to be honest, I was working a bit as well. It was football and there's loads of stuff on during Christmas, so kept me.
How many shifts did you have over the week there? From
a load? Four or five. Four?
Really, yeah?
Yeah, I was in a lot, like, the last couple of weeks, so I was in all the busy sort of days with the football on and rugby, so tired as well, like working late and in the evening over Christmas is a pain in the bollocks, but and it was good crack. Sure, I wasn't complaining.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to the year of mixed martial arts. Look what we have coming in the first 3 months.
Well, this is a pivotal thing on the 18th of January.
Massive.
Against Michael Cerrone. I mean, Donald Cerrone.
Michel Cerrone, a French waiter. As I said to Brad.
But, I mean, it's... It feels like there's a lot hanging in the, you know, waiting in the wings for what happens there. Is Conor this guy? I mean, if he is better than ever, like as John Kavanagh says, he's going to run through Donald Cerrone. If that's the case, if Conor McGregor is better than he ever has been, this fight won't go one round. The best version of Conor McGregor doesn't
go five rounds.
No.
Yeah, so, I agree with you. I think there's a lot on the line and there's a lot of pressure on Conor, as we've talked about in that interview.
A lot of pressure on John as well.
Yeah, there is a lot of pressure on John. But you know, the UFC are clearly looking at Conor as well. Something we probably haven't talked about. Dana did an interview last week. And you know, I think...
What did he do? What did he say? Sorry.
He was just basically saying, you know, it's a big fight for Conor. And, you know, I think a lot will depend, obviously, on the result of what he's going to do in 2020 and in his season and stuff like that. You know, wins, obviously.
This season thing is wild. It's taking on a new life of its own, hasn't it?
Everyone's talking about it. So I think...
a lad fighting three times in a year is not that strange.
It's bonkers. But I think there's a lot on the line for the UFC as well. And they want Conor to win. Make no bones about it. They want...
What do you think of the theory that I'm seeing that they actually don't care and they're not pushing this as much as they used to? Just to hear my point first.
Yeah.
Fuck it out. So they're pushing out this and they're not promoting it as much because they're saying to Conor, oh, you want some stock in the company? Show us how big you are then. Break him. Like, John's on there, like on Twitter, kind of giving out, but saying that we're making a big thing of the Irish people aren't interested. This is going to break the pay-per-view record.
No,
it's not. Like, it's not going to come near it.
Sniff that, no.
Not going to come near it. Like,
not a chance.
Do you know what I mean? Like, do they have, like, in the UFC's mind, do you feel like they're still putting all their apples in the Conor McGregor basket when they've, like, Israel Adesanya, Jorge Masvidal, all these emerging stars? I don't think so.
Not all of them, but
it certainly was that for a long time.
It's certainly an area in which they need to, we say this every year at the end, every year, they need to do more with other fighters. And in fairness, they've done a lot this year with certain fighters, but that's an ongoing process. And, you know, Conor, in terms of the company and what they have at the moment, probably is still, you know, the biggest draw. But, you know, Habib's knocking on the door, Masvidal's knocking on the door. That's probably pissed off Conor as well to a large extent. But at the end of the day, the UFC do need draws, and they need pay-per-view draws like McGregor. And I think, I don't necessarily think they're trying to get away from him, but they're probably just making him hungrier. And I think this adds to the pressure as well. For, you know, another thing that we probably haven't...
Does he remain as one of their big draws if he loses this fight?
No.
Do you think he's down to like 3 or 4 or 5?
Well, we see it happen with every fighter.
Yeah.
You know, all our sort of...
Even Brock Lesnar.
That's what I mean. You know, people sort of lose interest when fighters start losing. It's a sad state of affairs. It's a sad state.
It's fickle.
The way
it's fickle.
It's a fickle sport industry. Fickle. And, you know, we talk about it. You know, a win does a lot in Ireland. It does a lot in America. It does a lot for any sports personality. Look at Ollie Soltzer, for example. Oh, brilliant couple of games. Ooh. He made it now, and he's... Yeah, exactly. That's my point. That's my point. They don't want to know about him again. You know, it can change from a week-to-week basis. But, yeah, I still think the UFC very much are in Conor's... you know, they want Conor to do well. Like, they have too much riding the line. Yeah. Habib rematch, potential narrative with Ferguson as well. Then you have, obviously, Masvidal. You have these other guys. There's way too much money there for the UFC, not for them to want Conor McGregor to lose this fight.
And on that note, we will leave it for this week. Great to be back with the man with the earphones.
Said the legend, the Southside King.
Yeah. Doesn't even know his own neck of the woods off. Enough to pick a fucking coffee house. Imagine coming to Blanchetown and going, PZ, where's good to go in Blanchetown? And I go, the Blanche Center.
I'm not like all you posh Northsiders going out drinking fucking coffee every day.
You drink coffee every day?
Yeah, at home. I don't fucking go out and pay 16 quid
you
for
You do
a
Starbucks, yeah, you do, yeah.
I don't.
Every recommendation, Starbucks.
It's just a
every recommendation, Grafton Street.
Handy and
you're a tourist in your own city, my friend.
Okay, fuck you.
But thank you very much. You should move back to Kildare. You know that like the back of your hand.
I don't know why you're talking about.
Love yous loads. See yous next week.
Good luck.